We're very pleased to continue our study in the book of Zechariah. We're still in the 11th chapter of Zechariah, and last time we got into the 15th verse. In this part of the prophecy, Zechariah is giving some of the results of the fact that Christ, the Messiah, was rejected by many. And this rejection causes consequence. So he says in verse 15, "And the Lord said unto me, Take unto thee yet the instruments of a foolish shepherd." So the good shepherd has been rejected, so the people will be led by a foolish shepherd. The instruments of a foolish shepherd will be used. This wicked shepherd took the instruments which would do the flock harm. He had a broken staff or a club which he used to beat the foolish sheep into submission. This was clearly inappropriate for a good shepherd who thoughtfully and tenderly cared for his sheep. In the early centuries of the church, the New Testament church, God permitted this wicked shepherd to arise and destroy the sheep. He actually was an antichrist. Even during the church age, when they rejected the good shepherd, a foolish shepherd would rise up and do absolutely the opposite of what is expected of shepherds. He will destroy the sheep. So this verse 15 says again, "And the Lord said unto me, Take unto thee yet the instruments of a foolish shepherd." History shows that this happened in the church. Jesus said it would happen. John 5:43, "I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him ye will receive." History shows that another shepherd did come. The church had a falling away in the early centuries. And this is foretold by Paul in 2 Thessalonians 2. And we'd like to read from that chapter, verses 2 through 12. "Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, and by our gathering together unto him, that you be not soon shaken by mind, or be troubled, neither by spirit, or by word, or by letter as from us, as that the day of Christ is at hand. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Remember you not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things, and now you know what withholdeth, that he might be revealed in his time. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way, and then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him, whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness and of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause God shall send him strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness." Now, Paul says a lot in this passage here, and I'd like to just kind of give some of the highlights. First of all, he says, do not be deceived, do not be led into believing that Christ is going to come the next few days. Don't be deceived by any means, he says, for that day shall not come except the coming falling away first. The church is going to fall away. That is, the major part of the church will be led off into false doctrine and really no longer be the true church. It may appear to be the true church. It may seem to be, but actually it's not the church. It's a falling away, he says. "And that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition." Now, the man of sin is going to be the one who is the head of this false church, the head of this apostate church. And actually, we know from history that this is the great Catholic Church, and the head of it is actually the Pope. And he describes this man. He says, "Who opposes and exalteth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, says in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." Now, this man who has this position, he is infallible according to his doctrine and according to the doctrine of that church. He can do no wrong. He can make law. He can legislate law. In the place of God, actually. He can change whatever laws God has given into something else, and he can make law as he goes along. So he's showing himself that he's God. He's acting as God. And then Paul says, "Remember you not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things, and now you know what withholdeth, that it might be revealed in his time." Something's holding this back from happening, and the thing that was holding it back was, of course, the Roman government. The Roman government would not allow this man to rise to this kind of power for so long, but finally it did allow it to happen. He says, "For the mystery of iniquity doth already work." Now, that mystery of iniquity is the mystery of one man getting this much power. What happened is the bishops are to be over one congregation and not have any power over another congregation, but they gradually got it so the bishops could be over more than one congregation. Bishops could be over a whole city, then over several cities, then over a whole area, till finally one man was head over the whole church. And Paul says, "Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way." That's the Roman government. He's not letting it happen. He's preventing it from happening until this prevention was taken out of the way. He says, "And then that wicked shall be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming." Now, as soon as he mentions him being revealed, it just seems that Paul can't hold back. Then he immediately talks about what his end is going to be, but that end is going to come when Christ comes again. So he's got centuries yet before he's consumed and destroyed. He says, "Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders." This false church would have different kind of signs and lying wonders. They could seem to perform miracles. They could seem to heal diseases and all kinds of things that they consider to be miracles. But he calls them lying wonders. They're really not true. And he says, "All deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish. And they're going to perish because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved." It's the truth that's going to make the difference. And so he says, as he concludes in the second chapter of 2 Thessalonians 2, "And for this cause," that is because they didn't love the truth, "but for this cause shall God send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie." Now, a strong delusion is a strong false belief. So when you get to the point that you don't believe the truth, you don't love the truth, you don't want the truth really, then God's going to let you have another belief. And it's a delusion. A delusion is a false belief. And he says it's a strong delusion, a strong false belief that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. So the truth is so important. To not believe the truth cuts you out of the benefits of being God's servant, God's child. You're out of the family of God. And so this 15th verse and the next one following here in Zechariah 11 is really alluding to this as he talks about what's going to happen as a result of them rejecting the Messiah. So Paul says there must be a falling away first before the second coming of Christ. "The man of sin who will be revealed is called the son of perdition." Perdition means one who is determined to remain spiritually lost. Paul says in 2 Thessalonians 2 and 8 that this man of sin opposeth all that's called God and exalteth himself above all that's righteous. He is God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now this is an accurate description of the apostate church, which is the Catholic Church, with the Pope accurately fitting this description of this man of sin. The Pope rose to full power in 533 A.D. and ruled supreme in the fallen church until 1793 A.D. when he lost much but not nearly all of his power. All this time, the true church was hidden and is unknown by history. Yet the Catholic Church reigned supreme and brutally tortured and killed those who did not follow its laws. The Bible was taken from the people, and it was not even legal to translate the Bible into English for many centuries. It was against the law to even own a Bible with an English translation. The only way for forgiveness of sins was to confess to a Catholic priest, and that's still true of their doctrine today. This great fallen monster still has much power today, but he's been bound for a figurative 1,000 years, according to Revelation 20, verses 1 through 3. That's a figurative number. It's not a literal 1,000 years. He's not completely out of power. He has a lot of power, but he didn't have near the power he had back before he was had power taken from him around 1793. Truly this man fits the title of man of sin. Truly he opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, who as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Truly he is a foolish shepherd with the instruments of a foolish shepherd. Next, let's read verse 16 of Zechariah 11. For lo, I will raise up a shepherd in the land, which shall not visit those that be cut off, neither shall seek the young one, nor heal that is broken, nor feed that standeth still, but he shall eat the flesh of the fat and tear their claws in pieces. What a curse this foolish shepherd will be to the people. He will not care for the lost. He will take no care for the young, nor heal the injured, but will let it die of its bruises because he cares more for himself than he does for the welfare of the flock. He rises to power at the expense of the flock. He will do nothing to support the weak or comfort the feeble-minded. Foolish shepherds eat the meat of the choice sheep. They will have the best for themselves. They will so abuse the flock that they tear off the very hoofs by overdriving them. Verse 17 says, woe to the idle shepherd that leaveth the flock. The sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. His arm shall be clean dried up, and his right eye shall be utterly darkened. Zechariah condemns the worthless shepherd, noting that his strength, that is his arm, and his intelligence, that is his eye, would be taken away from him. 2 Thessalonians 2:8 says, and then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy him with the brightness of his coming. Revelation 19, verse 20 says, and the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast, and them that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into a lake of fire, burning with brimstone. Revelation 20, verse 10 says, and the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. Here we see the eventual destiny of this great man of sin who now heads the apostate church. Jesus talks about a lake of fire prepared for the devil and his angels, but those who are cast aside at the judgment day will also be put into this lake of fire with the devil and his angels. So we see that this man of sin is going to wind up there also. He's going to be there where the devil was cast into that lake of fire and brimstone, and that's what we know as hell. So now we come to the end of chapter 11.